Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Last week, I wrote a tweet that I put out on Twitter.
As one does.
And I said, there's a wild thing where if you make things look easy, people believe the road to get there has been easy.
That was you.
That was me.
That wasn't like Oscar Wilde.
No. That was actually from my own brain and heart and soul.
It wasn't William Shakespeare.
Whenever I tweet, I put my entire heart and soul and brain out there.
It wasn't Danielle Steele.
Jeff, I wanted the people to realize that even though this podcast of ours sounds so good, even though we get top-notch guests to come over to our apartment to talk for an hour and a half, this is not an easy journey. We're like a Volkswagen, and more and more, we see ourselves outpaced by Porsches.
Mazdas. I thought
Porsches.
You were
going
to... Okay. Wait, do you say Porsche or Porsche?
I said Porsche. Porsche. I believe that is the correct saying.
I say Porsche.
Well, I believe you are incorrect.
I mean, who's to say? Leave a comment.
I'm to say.
Okay.
More and more, we have to fight these big buildings, these big corporations, these bigger entities, when we're just those same two guys
in a Volkswagen.
In a Volkswagen.
Yeah. A Mazda.
And so, nor a Volvo.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are, trying to compete with everybody who is passing us by. And a lot of you guys out there are like, hey, where are your video components? Like, why won't you guys tape every episode and put it up on YouTube? And it's like, well, honestly, we don't have the resources to do that. We want to live by certain standards. We want to elevate our product considerably. And we saw that there was a way to make this happen with your help. And that is to start a Patreon.
Right. So if people don't know what Patreon is, it's a way to collectively meet goals and fund them.
So if you guys are like, hey, we want video content, we're like, cool, so do we. Let's set a goal. And that goal was $500 a month. And with your help,
We met that.
Shout out to all of you guys who have contributed to make this happen. We will start posting our episodes at youtube.com/itsthereal. We've set other goals. And with these goals, your investment is not just one way. We give you things back.
Right. So we will give you t-shirts. We'll give you extra episodes of our podcast.
We'll give you guys producer credits.
That is everybody who's contributed $20 to our Patreon. So that would be Torian Blakeney, Daniel David, Jamal Jamot, Jeffrey Areza, Eric Gonzalez, Lauren Reeves, Jaswinder Verdi, Armando Gallegos, and Obi Marroquin.
Shout out to everybody who has contributed at patreon.com/itsthereal so far. And shout out to everybody who's hearing about it for the first time right now and wants to be on this journey with us. Whether it's a $2 contribution
or $5 or $10, $20, you know, people ask if they could do more than that. And so we set up a few. So that's, we have a $50 one and we have a $100 one.
And shouts to the people who are doing that.
If you're out there and you are like, hey, I want to contribute $5,000 a month,
yeah,
Jamal Jamot,
we will not say no to you.
No, but we will get that money, Jamal Jamot.
But honestly, it means so much to us that we know we're not in this alone.
Yeah.
You know, it can feel like the fight is fixed. It can feel like you've done all that you can do, and with no resources and no, you know, executive vice president to help you along, it's a lot to continue. Listen, shout out to us for making it 300 episodes on our own, and shout out to all the episodes and all the plans and all the goals that we have for the future alongside you out there. So, Jeff, with that said, who's on the podcast today?
On the podcast today is Jessie Reyes, our girl from Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, Canada. Jessie came in with the best energy. She is the best soul. She has just fantastic stories and amazing sense of humor. And I so enjoyed this conversation. You know, it's funny. I edited this podcast a bunch of times to get it right because we have this new audio interface. Shout out to our friends over at photosavings.com. And you know, there's a lot of trial and error to get the volumes right, to get the
ambient noise.
Yeah, the mechanics all settled. And so I listened to it probably 8 different times this weekend, and I got a little something every single time, you know, whether it was Jessie's sense of humor, whether it was her reactions, whether it was just the heart and soul that she has in sharing her story.
I notice you're saying everything that she brought to the table.
That is true, Jeff. I did recognize your sense of humor. Mm. I did recognize your heart and soul, Jeff. Mm. This is a standout episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is the stuff I want to hear. Not, I definitely don't want to hear about her, and I really don't want to hear about you.
If you want to watch her, you want to watch Jeff, and you want to watch myself, youtube.com/itsthereal. Right now, the episode is live. Shout out to our guy, Johan. More episodes to be filmed every week going forward. We're going to try to film Two Jews and Two Black Dudes. Lots of plans. Shout out to all of you guys for being along on this ride of ours. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
This is going to be the most fun interview you've ever had in your life.
Perfect.
And the more fun you have with us, the more fun we're going to have with you.
And again, don't fuck it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to do my best.
Yeah. Did I look intense there?
Yeah.
You felt intense.
Yeah. Yeah. You good, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay. You good, Jesse?
Yes.
All right, cool. Yo, what up, it's Eric, a.k.a. What's Poppin' Slime, a.k.a. Nickelodeon.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Setting Up Bear Traps, a.k.a. Instagram Modeling.
Yo, what's up, it's Jesse Reyes, a.k.a. Pint Size Colombian Thug.
Yes, your third favorite podcast to waste time, but it's real. Ga-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra. Jesse, what's happening?
I'm good. How are you guys, man?
Everything's good. Yo, Jesse needs that coffee now, you know what I'm saying?
It's a little bit of mint tea.
Okay. Something for the throat.
Yeah.
You're trying to, you know, like, be a real artist here and, you know.
And not everything. Sound like ass? Yes. I'm trying to not sound like a frog that's been doing coke for 50 days.
Yo, so, we have a lot of friends over at Roc Nation. We have never been to the Roc Nation brunch. Mm-hmm. How is it, and were you, like, totally secure in your choice for what you wore, especially when someone like Chance the Rapper shows up and doesn't adhere to the fucking dress code?
That's funny.
No, for real. Like, how do you dare show up not in, like, a suit
pastel suit.
Yeah, pastel suit. Like, he showed up with his hat, with a leather coat. Like, come on. Do you look at that and you're just like, yo, I put in so much work here? Or did you not?
No, well, there was a year where we got linked last minute, so I showed up with a black t-shirt and some camo pants and my boots, and there was people in gowns and stuff, and it was, I think that might have been my first, that was my first Roc Nation brunch. That was the first, yeah, that was my first.
Wait, how many have you been to? Like, three, four?
Three or four.
Five, seven?
Three? By the way.
Three.
30.
I'm offended for you.
That's funny.
No, but if you show up in camo pants and just, like, looking around, are you just like,
Yeah, did you feel underdressed?
I was there with my dudes, my management, and we were all kind of looking bummy. So it was like, why are we in this? We're in this. We're making the best of it. Networking, got to talk to Jigga, got to talk to B.
That's a pretty good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what you're wearing.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it makes your skin thicker for moments like that. But this last one went off. Like, I was working with a homie from Toronto that's a wicked stylist, Steph Major, and she linked me with this, like, beautiful orange massive gown, but it felt like a bathrobe, so I felt like I was still, like, a part of me. I was like, I'm not in nothing uncomfortable, like, it was still nice.
Wait, did it feel like terry cloth, or you mean like that it was just, like, comforting?
It was just comforting and, like, easy, like, just get out the shower, Aveeno,
it yeah. Looked super dope.
Thanks.
You had on tall shoes.
Tall as hell. Yeah, tall as hell.
Did you feel like you had to, like, show those off as well, or were you just like, this is all part of the illusion, I'm suddenly, you know, 6 feet tall?
I was wearing what felt like a 10-foot long carpet, so, like, I had to elevate to make sure that I didn't just look like a tent, an elevated tent, you know, just
yeah.
A little bit.
Did you meet anyone that you hadn't previously there of note?
Oh, I met Rihanna for the first time there.
How was that?
Mad cool. She's dope. Like, I got love for people at Rock, man. They've
for sure.
Excuse me. 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when we were looking, or when we were taking meetings to partner with different labels, we were in a really fortunate position where there was people coming to us. But the downside was that when we made our decision to partner with Island, there was a lot of labels and people at labels that we had to call and say, hey, thanks for the free dinners, but it's not gonna pop. And there was a lot of people that were like, bout it. And then the second we called, the energy just shifted, right? But I remember being on the phone with Ty Ty and letting the guys on Lenny and talking to, like, Jay, and letting them know that this is a decision that we made, and them still being like, you know what, it's all love, we still believe in you. And it's been like the proof is in the pudding. Like they still mess with us. They still
give
us opportunities.
I remember like Angie Martinez going to like your first shows and like, you know, like I thought that was through a rock relationship probably. No, that was just like she fucked with you.
Man,
and when we wanted to get in touch with you like maybe a year and a half ago, we hit Lenny S and we're like, yo, Lenny.
Lenny's the best.
He's the best. Yeah. And we're like, yo, Lenny, is Jesse rock? And he's like, nah, but they're family. And so we're like, all right, cool. And then that started up the relationship. Sick, so.
Yeah, he's the best.
Lenny,
man,
is the best, yeah.
They're just all dope. They're all dope. Every time I talk to Jay Brown, I feel like I learned something.
Yeah.
Every time I walk in that building, I feel like I walk out smarter.
Yeah.
Because everyone's just always dropping game.
Yeah.
It's dope.
So you get to the brunch, and you meet Rihanna.
Everybody wants to ask, I'm going to, what does she smell like?
She smelled great. she smelled great.
Yeah, Irish Spring.
I don't know what it was, but it was great.
Do you
like feel her presence around you when she's like walking up and you just sort of like, oh.
You more so feel everyone else feeling her presence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I was like mad in the way, like kind of out of it and talking to her managers because the rock guys are our fam.
Yeah.
So it's just this.
Yeah.
That and watching that and then being hesitant because I don't want to contribute to that. So it was very much like I was just chill about it. And then when the moment presented itself, it was like, hey, I'm a fan. Thank you for redefining the identity of female beauty in your brand. Appreciate it. And then, bye.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
you know how many people would have froze up and just been like,
Yeah, just like, bleh.
Yeah.
That's funny. I did that with Frank.
Did you really?
Yeah, but I didn't, like, I almost avoided that. We were at a show somewhere in Europe. Had the chance to see him perform. It was the first time. Saw him. Went backstage. Saw him about... Like, Frank, like, I'm a Frank stan.
Yeah.
10 feet away from me. And my manager's like, well, go into the circle, say hello. And I was like, 10 feet away. And I look over, and he looks up at me, and we kind of smiled. And I was like, because I knew I was going to walk up and be like,
Yeah.
Not today. Today's just not the day for it. It's just not the day.
But, damn.
Yeah.
I feel like, not to, like, bring this down or anything, but I feel like we've seen a lot of people in the circles we run in pass on the earlier side of things, and I think that's made both of us
take those opportunities to
be active in telling people like how we feel about them, or true, taking that chance to like go up to someone and just be like, yo, you may not know me, but what you mean to me is like infinite.
Beautiful.
And yeah, yeah.
No, yo, listen, man, I've been able to dominate it sometimes. Like, for example, wow, we're just talking about like first encounters with celebrities. Welcome to First Encounters with Celebrities.
I would happily have you rebrand the entire show, by the way. That's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. We're only 300 episodes in. It's okay.
Hey,
yeah.
No biggie.
Yeah.
The first time I met Beyonce, I was like nervous. But same thing. I just dealt with it and walked up. And the day before, I had just done the MTV Awards. I had performed there. And I missed like my second last note. It's this really high note and my voice croaked. And I've been practicing so much, I've been running through it. Second last note, croaked. I was cheesed the rest of that day. I'm like running scales in the car, like I get it's hard for me not to get sucked back into it and then work to get better. The next day was Made in America. So I got booked for that show. And then I had done my set and then went back. And then Jay's up there, say what up, Ty Ty. And then B's there. And I'm like, oh. And she's like, oh, hi. And it's like super sweet. And I'm like, hi. And she's like, you killed your performance. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize you watched the set. She was like, no, but I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about the MTV one. I was like, what? I'm like, I missed a note. She was like, no, it was amazing. Like, you did so good. And I was like, thank you. And then.
You threw up.
And then Jay goes, how you feeling? And I'm like, yo, I'm so stupid. He's like, how you feeling? I'm like, hungry. And they're like, and they're like, oh, there's food. There's food over here. And I was like, no, for like life. Oh. For life. And then they both giggled. And then I look at my managers and I'm like, well, I'm going to excuse myself. Thank you guys for everything. And then I leave. And I swear to God, I like walked down from like the little backstage area. I found a piece of grass. I sat down and I started meditating. And I had to just come back down to earth because it's not just B of this year, but it's like Destiny's Child. It's Say My Name. It's Dangerously in Love. It's how she's this beautiful CEO that's capable of still making family a priority, but seeing success in music and seeing success in so many different facets. So there's just a lot that I admire her for and respect her for. And I had to just settle. I had to come back down to earth.
How do you feel when kids come up to you and you're the Rihanna or the Beyonce for them?
That's nuts. That's crazy.
But it's a reality, though, you know?
It's nuts. It's humbling.
Yeah.
It's humbling. It's.
Do you feel like you're able to give them what they want?
I try to. Yo, it's crazy because someone asked me earlier today, they're like, they asked like who I look up to, and I said Beyonce is one, and they were like, what's something you learned? And I said, man, I remember watching an interview early on of hers where they were asking her about fan encounters because she got like rushed by a bunch of people, and she said that she makes it a point that no matter what kind of day she's having, no matter if like something really bad happened or if she's stressed out, that to be aware that for whoever's seen her, that's like, that might be the only time that they get to see her, and they're excited and they have this idea and it's just beautiful. So even if you feel like shit, you still have to just be present and be appreciative, because without those are the people that are making your career possible.
For
like,
sure.
Those fans are the reason I'm here talking to y'all. The reason
Lenny S is the reason you're here talking to us.
Lenny, yeah.
All right, let's take it back to the very, very beginning. Where are you originally from?
I was born in Toronto, Canada.
Toronto.
Yeah, you say Toronto, not Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the right way. Yeah.
That's the right way.
Toronto.
Yeah.
Toronto.
Yeah.
So, what was growing up in Toronto like?
Different. Dope. Beautiful.
Is it different? Like, because it's probably like all you know, right? So, like.
Well, no, because I ended up moving around a lot. So, I was in Toronto and then I moved downtown and then I moved to the suburbs and then I moved to Florida and then I moved back.
Now, Florida is different.
Yeah. Because, like, the first three, I was like, well, these are all.
Yeah. The suburbs and downtown. Yeah.
But why did you move so much within the city?
My family, we're trying to better our situation because we were living by Jane and Driftwood in this really small apartment, and this is how it was when we moved hello west to this place called Brampton. And I remember when I was trying to go to bed, my mom says, she's like, you'd complain and be like, I'm used to falling asleep to sirens because that's just what I was used to, and now it was just crickets. So it was intense. But something that's beautiful about growing up in Toronto and having memories there is that it's so multicultural. Like, you can walk 10 blocks and hear 10 different languages. It's a lot like New York. It's a lot like London, where it's just immersed in culture. But you could go to another state, or you could go to the same thing and go to another province in Canada. It's a different story.
Yeah.
But in Toronto, that's a beautiful thing about it. And I guess I appreciated it more when I moved out of the city. I appreciated it more even when I moved to Florida, because you just feel the racism there more. You feel it a lot more than you would in Toronto. Still present. It's not as bad.
It's a louder thing.
It's a louder thing.
You were just doing a Q&A on Twitter maybe like 2 weeks ago, where you were talking about how inspired you were. Like, what inspires you? And you said your father's story. What was he doing? And what was he doing to make your life better than his?
Everything. My dad was born in Cali, Colombia, and he is the youngest of three kids. His mom passed away when he was like something like under a year old, like 11 months. His mom passed, so then it was just his dad raising him and his two sisters. And then his dad passed away when he was like 16.
Mm-hmm.
And like my dad just, he ended up moving to Canada. He had my brother in Colombia, or had my brother, and then my brother's mom passed. And so then my dad's not repeating, like, it's just, you know, he's raising this kid alone. And he met my mom, and he worked for a company for like 20 years, gave 20 years of his life to this company to like help our family. If you met my dad, there's a lot more, like there's nights, there's overtime, there's the fact that like he was the type of dad that if, like, I'll give you an example. When everyone was riding around on those razors, those scooters,
mm-hmm.
remember those?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a ton of money. I told my papi. I'm like, papi, yo, quiero uno. Like, I want one. He's the type that would go in the garage, find leftover wood from either, like, his old company or, like, just and behind, like, our Publix, and just get fake wood from over there and buy two little wheels from Home Depot and stay in the garage for like 3 hours, and then painted it in Colombia colors.
Wow.
Like, painted it yellow, blue, and red, and then was like, here's your scooter. And it's something that I appreciate so much now, and I'm almost guilty that I didn't appreciate it as much as I was a kid, because when you're a kid, you're like, oh, fuck, papi, but it's not a raise or
that. Yeah, you're like, you're I don't have the thing that
everybody else has because you think that that's normal. But my dad was busting ass. And if you met him today, you wouldn't know that it was such an uphill, that he's dealt with a lot of uphill stuff.
Just always very positive,
like,
yeah.
Not even, like, positive, but real as shit, because he'll tell you what it is. Like, he doesn't mince words, but fun. And, like, he's the type that even if someone does him dirty, he's not one to hold it. Like, it just, it rolls off. And because he knows that life is really short, so he's like, why am I going to stay mad? Why am I going to ruin my day because someone was a dick? Like,
when did you come around and start to understand, like, the dynamic of what was happening?
When I was 18, I was a year into, I guess, the first real depression I'd ever gone through. It was dark. When I was 19, like, I guess 18, like the end of 18 when I started coming out of it. And I looked around and I didn't see a lot of the people that I started with, but the people that I saw that were constant were my mom and dad. And we, like, they come on the road with me now. They have bunk beds in the tour bus.
To this day?
Yeah, to this day. Wow. A lot of that happens too because, like, I'm trying to right the wrongs that I did when I was a kid because I was an asshole. I wasn't a good kid. I was a dick and I was always in trouble and I would run away for, like, constantly. There was just no appreciation. I just was a dick. If you met me at 14, you'd probably hate me. I was an asshole. So I think when I was 18, it was when it finally clicked that I was like, I've been an asshole to the people that love me the most.
Growing up with your mom, your dad, and your brother?
My mom, my pops, my brother was, my brother's, kind of this story, because my brother had his first kid when he was mad young. So my brother left the house early. So we have like a modern family dynamic because my oldest nephew, who's my brother's first kid, is closer in age to me than my brother.
Wow.
And then my brother's got four kids. So then my two nieces and my two nephews, that's gang.
But for all intents and purposes, you're the only child living at home at that point.
No, because my brother, so my brother would still come around and my my mom's got a crazy story too. My mom used to like teach preschool and daycare and stuff in Colombia, but when she came to Toronto, you know, in Canada, immigrants, they don't honor it. Like, they don't really honor degrees and shit.
Right.
So she started a daycare at her crib, and my whole life, it was forever five kids in the house at a time. And my mom would, our house raised a bunch of kids, these little blue-eyed, blonde-haired kids speaking Spanish because my mom was speaking Spanish. And so it's weird. Like, I have my big brother, and then I have a guy I call my little brother. His name is Justin. That I've had in my life since he was 6 months old.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Toys everywhere?
Toys. Our basement, like, we had a two-floor crib, and our upstairs is where we lived. And then downstairs was, like, ABCs and colored rubber flooring and little, like, EDB
kitchens. Oh, my God.
And all that. It was, like, a little school downstairs.
When you're growing up and...
And tias that used to live with me too, and like my grandparents.
Everybody.
So it was a full house. It was like Full House.
Yeah.
It was like Full House.
Yeah.
So, but when you're growing up, what are you doing for fun? Like, aside from the asshole stuff that you're doing, like, what do you find enjoyment in?
Music.
Okay, so where does music come into your life then?
Early. My brother brought music into my life. He introduced me to reggae when I was like four.
Yeah?
Yeah, three, which is the funniest song. Like, not even the song you'd expect, with like Snow and Former.
Oh, yeah.
Was the first reggae taste that I had.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with that because like...
He is Canadian.
He is Canadian. Yeah. And it was huge.
It was huge, yeah. And then it was like, what's Bob Marley? What's Tanya Stephens? What's Barrington Levy? And then I just fell in love with reggae. And at the same time, my papi would always have like Alquimia, like a lot of Colombian cumbia, a lot of salsa playing in the crib. And I started writing poetry and like at a young age and then songs. And then I used to sing in church too with my pops and play guitar in church too.
And did anybody see... you know, potential there?
I had one teacher in grade 7.
Shout him out.
Mrs. Hidden. Miss Tracy Hidden. She's flames. We called her up. We did a documentary with Vivo like a year ago. So I pulled up on her.
That's awesome.
You know what? Here's something funny. I remember like, yeah, she's lit. She was such a dope. So I'll tell you why I love her. Because in a span where I was constantly getting calls from the fucking principal with whatever, Ray Tay Tay, Jesse this, Jesse that. Or... running away, whatever. It was the first time anybody had ever called the crib with good news. And she called the crib to be like, because I did this poetry project where we had to make this book, and she's like, it's perfect. Like, she loved it. So she called the crib and was like, Jesse really has a talent with writing. Like, she just wanted to enforce that and let my parents know. right? Because they speak, like, we speak Spanish at home. We don't speak English, so I'm not making Spanish poetry, you know? And, yeah. So I stayed in contact with her, and I remember, like, the year after high school, because I didn't go to college, I still loved her off, so I would still pull up at the school and be like, hey, what's up, Miss Hidden? Like, just to say what up and say everything's good. And she was like, so what are you doing? And I'm like, well, she's like, what college are you going to? I'm like, I'm not. I'm like, I'm just, like, doing bottle service and, like, playing guitar and busking and trying to be a musician. She was like, her jaw dropped. Like, she was so nervous, and I could just see the fear in her face, but it was just jokes because it was ironic coming, that fear coming from her, from somebody that essentially help nudge me in that direction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just cool to call her up years later for the documentary to be like, yo, I told you, don't worry.
Yeah, it worked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, did you have any friends who you hung out with who were also, like, into music, like you were into music? Where you would create and be part of, like...
Was there a larger scene?
Eventually. I joined this thing called the Remix Project in Toronto that, like, completely changed my life. It's a youth program for at-risk kids in the city. And it was jokes because when I found out about it... I had been living in Florida already. So I had moved to Florida.
Is with your folks?
My parents put in the applications for visas. They waited 16 years to get approved. When we got approved, we all went. But then they had to go back to Canada, so I stayed in Florida by myself.
By yourself?
Yeah, which was a trip.
And you were how old, 16?
No. At this point, I'm 20.
Oh, okay.
21.
Got it. Florida's terrible.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Like, there's just, like, so many, like, crazy things that happen there all the time.
Florida man.
Yeah, Florida man.
Florida man.
Yeah. Every single day, there's a new Florida man, like, story.
Yeah.
Dude. I remember when that zombie thing came out.
Yeah.
That was nuts.
I know. Yeah.
That was nuts. I drive by that. Like, I used to drive by that area. I was like, what?
What, the bath salts district?
Yeah.
Yeah, the bath salts
district. Yeah.
Yeah, the bath salts district.
So, wait, what part of Florida did you move down to?
Fort Lauderdale.
I mean, that's not even like Miami. It's not.
It's like
Orlando.
30 minutes outside of Miami. Yeah. 30 minutes outside of Miami.
Yeah.
So I ended up bartending in Florida, and I was bartending in Fort Lauderdale and in Miami. And I was cheese because I wasn't making any headway with music aside from busking on the beach.
After you graduate high school, did you see any like clear path? Were you like, oh, I know what I'm going to do in terms of like music's it, and that's what's gonna be my whole life?
I know I wanted music, but I just didn't have the blueprint. I don't feel like any creative does. It's so difficult because institutions aren't set up to help creative kids.
What?
You know?
And yeah.
Where does the Remix Project come in then?
So I moved to Florida, and I was trying to do what I did in Toronto. In Toronto, I would do open mics. In Toronto, I would busk in this place called Kensington Market. I would do sessions with people I'd find online and be like, all right, let's work. And we'd go over to their crib, and they had a studio in their closet, and it was perfect. So I would do that. And then moved to Florida, and I'm having a hard time because I don't have, at least I had a little network in Toronto that I was building, but I'm starting from scratch.
Yeah.
In Toronto, I used to do this shit. I used to make I used to do covers and then put them on Twitter, but with clickbait stuff to get producers and artists to see it. So it'd be like, I wanted The Weeknd and his team to see my stuff. So it was like The Weeknd kissing stripper, blah, blah, blah. and then, which is nuts because Elangelo, one of his producers, saw it, or Doc McKinney saw it. Doc McKinney was one of the like main producers.
Yeah.
And showed it to Elangelo. And then...
And he's like, The Weeknd kissing strippers? Like, what? Like,
<that's> so funny. And then we ended up working together before I left to Florida, me and Doc, right? I ended up developing him, like he's mad sick. Like I got so much advice, learned so much wisdom from him. And when I moved to Florida, we still stayed in touch. I was Skyping him because I treated him like a mentor. We were Skyping, and I was complaining because certain shit wasn't happening fast. I was like, these producers that I'm working with aren't sending stuff. I was trying new management, but the management wasn't like my first management. But it wasn't a perfect fit, and I was just rotating, like complaining. He's letting me go, and then he's like, "Are you done?" And I was like, "Yes." And he was like, "Jesse, you gotta do what you can where you're at with whatever you got." Like, if you're waiting for producers, learn how to produce. Hmm. If you're waiting for this, you got to learn how to do it. Because when people see you busting your ass for it, that's the standard that you're going to set for anybody that's coming around. So then I shot a music video with a homie in Florida, like, that night. Like, called him up. We did it. I told him, give me the footage because I know that if you're not paying somebody, shit takes forever. So I was like, give me the footage. Stayed up 48 hours, learned how to edit it myself.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
It took me 48 hours to edit like a 3-minute video because I had never done it before, but did it. blasted it to everybody on Twitter, on Facebook, and I had like 2,000 people on Facebook. I blasted it to about 1,500 when you used to be able to look up professions. So if you went on Facebook and typed 93.5 flow, then if anybody was affiliated or listed them as their employer, they would come up. So I would spam everybody and be like, hey, my name is Jesse, listen to my shit, tell me what you think, like everywhere.
The weekend's kissing strippers.
Well, I wouldn't do the weekend kissing strippers because I didn't it worked that one time.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. A lot can go wrong with that. Like, yeah. God forbid you guys decide to title this The Weekend Kissing Strippers. And then, and now, no, like,
first
he's
of all,
dope.
It'd be, it's the real kissing strippers.
I'm sorry, sorry.
Yeah.
The real kissing strippers. Yes. But, like, so I started doing that. And then one of the people that got it was Maurizio Ruiz, who's actually one of my managers now. But at the time, he was doing music videos and affiliated with Remix. And he was like, yo, if you're serious about this, there's this thing called the Remix Project in Toronto. This like, Boy Wonder is affiliated, Drake's affiliated, 40 is affiliated, Wonder Girl's affiliated.
You're like, yes.
Yeah, and so then I begged my bar manager to give me the weekend off. I got a $50 flight on Spirit Airlines, flew to Buffalo, had a homie pick me up. Shout out Ryan.
Wait, before we get there. Mm-hmm. So you flew Spirit Airlines, mm-hmm. and you made it here today.
I made it. I flew Spirit so often, you have no idea.
Were you able to bring luggage?
A backpack. Yeah. No, I brought a backpack.
What was in it, air?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do they have seatbelts on Spirit Air?
No,
are they
just
long
do this.
Benches?
Yeah. They just that's pray your seatbelt. You just pray. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to say your prayer. Yeah.
It's like a subway. Like, everyone stands there with, like, you know, holding the the thing.
But yo, I'll, like, if it wasn't for Spirit,
you wouldn't be here today.
I don't think, like, it's part of the story. The reason I was able to afford that ticket is because Spirit had those deals.
Yeah. That night, when you shoot that music video and you spam everybody that you know and that you don't know, and you put it out into the world, are you able to sleep that night before someone hits you back? Or, like, what do you want to happen? What are you hoping for?
Yeah, are you, like, watching the views, like...
I was dead because it had been 48 hours. So I knocked. I had a good time knocking out. And then when I woke up, it was lit. But I just, the quote resonated. Do whatever you can, wherever you're at, with whatever you got. We don't have a blueprint. So you just have to, like, make opportunities. If you don't have opportunities, make them.
Yeah.
It's easy. As much as people want to complain about wherever they're at in life, you can make opportunities every
Straight
day.
Up.
So
you got yourself up to Buffalo and then over the border.
And then auditioned that Remix, and then they took me, man. And that place, like, I love that place. That place changed my life. That place made a bridge between six-year-old me watching a screen, because it was so far removed. Watching music videos, watching that stuff is just so beautiful. And I'm like, ah, fuck, conflicted, because part of me loves watching it, and the other half is like, I don't want to be on this couch. I want to be there. But it's so far removed, and no school is teaching how to do that. So far removed. But the Remix Project, what they do is they provide mentorship. So they bring people like King Louie, who also contributed to changing my life, Wicked, Wicked Dope, Chicago rapper, bring in and speak to students and speak to the students and to the kids involved, and tell them about their story, tell them about their progress. But it's special because you get to see your dream personified. You get to see your dream, some vision that was so far removed, deep in this box, in this other universe that people tell you won't be able to get, and you need a plan B, and make sure you get this, make sure, like, all this bullshit, because no one has faith in, anyone that's not creative tends to not have faith in creatives.
100% true. This is the most random thing that you bring up, King Louie, because did a video with him years ago, but we were talking about him yesterday with our friend Anise.
No way.
Who went to the Apple store to get his phone fixed and went to the Genius Bar.
He had to get his AirPods.
Oh, his AirPods fixed, right.
Yeah.
And so they pull up. He's like, well, will you play something off your phone? And My Hoes They Do Drugs shows up. And he's like, oop. And, like, have to change that real quick. But King Louie was a mentor for
Huge.
You.
Huge. That guy's the best.
The best.
Would you have ever thought, you're like, yo, this guy from Chicago, like, you know, will be sort of my guy?
God is beautiful, man. God is great. It was so crazy. He pulled up. Yo. I pulled up to school, like, to Remix, because there was going to be a speech. I pulled up, and I go into the room, to the studio, and then I didn't realize it was full. And Louis there, Dole's there, his manager. Gavin Shepherd, who's one of the founders, one of the engineers, and another one of the participants is in the room. And I'm like, oh, shit. But then I was like, oh, I didn't realize I was interrupting, but I was going to say hi anyway. Hey, what's up? Nice to meet you. Hey, what's up? Nice to meet you. Introduce myself to everyone in the room. Excuse myself. When I leave, I go into the other production room, and then someone comes back, and they're like, yo, Gav's playing your record for Louis. And I was like, oh, lit. And then Louis comes out, and he's like, yo, this song's called Statuses. It's this really, it's not out, but we put it out on Instagram as an installation with different posts. But anyways, he was like, that's your song? I'm like, yeah. He's like, it's about subtweets? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, that's it. And I was like, thanks. And then he did his talk. At the end of his talk, his manager comes up to me. He's like, yo, Louis wants to work. And I was like, bless. And he's like, all right, we'll do it tonight. And I'm like, bless. And so I tell Mauricio and me, he still's not managing me. This is all very loose still. Wow, yeah. Crazy. Because this day's important. This is all very loose still. We're still working, but nothing's defined because we're both just working hard. And they're like, there's no studio available, but we're going to a random condo in Toronto. Pull up. All right, cool. We're pulling up. When we pull up, it's me in there. It's Sean Leon, dope rapper from Toronto. It's Wonder Girl. It's Redway, another dope rapper that we lost. Who was also from Toronto. Doc McKinney's in there. Spooky Black's in there. And Louis and his manager. And I think that's everybody. And my manager. Not my manager yet. But we're all in there. And I'm nervous as fuck because I'm the only singer in there. Everyone else is a producer or a rapper. So everyone else is like playing beats. And like it seemed like that was the vibe.
But there's no natural fit for like what you're supposed to
do. For me, no natural fit. And I'm sitting there like, what the fuck am I going to do? Fuck. So then I look at Louis, and, like, we make eye contact, and I'm like, you want to jam? And he's like, what? He's, like, smoking. I'm like, you want to just jam? And he's like, all right. I was like, all right, lit. So I took out my guitar, and then I start playing. And then he comes and sits closer, and then we start vibing so much so that we go out onto the balcony. Living in the Sky, our first song together, was made on the balcony of Ricardo. Shout out Ricardo's apartment. And then we did it, and it was lit, and then we have to leave, so we leave, and me and Ruiz, we go to a chicken spot, like, down the block, and we sit down, I'll never forget, we sit down in front of each other, and it's almost like we saw everything happening, and we're like, so we're doing this? And then I'm like, yeah, we're doing this, and then we were like, all right, we're doing it, like, that moment's very much ingrained, and it was after that session with Louis that we were like, all right, we're doing this.
Yo, there's so much there. So first of all, it's such a little thing, but it means so much for you to go and introduce yourself around that studio to everybody. Mm. Like, so many people don't. They can be big-headed. They can be like, yo, I'm the star. I'm the person who's, like, the main, you know, attraction here, and don't, like, shake everyone's hands. Like, you set the tone off, like, so right with that. Thanks. Like, who knows what could have happened if you didn't do that, you know?
Yeah, right? Great.
Wild. But, okay, so you and Louis collaborate on that. What does that song do for you?
A lot, because people in Chicago started fucking with me. Chance heard me through that. Chance tweeted the lyrics.
Chance with the leather jacket and the
Chance with the threes.
Got it.
And then my manager linked up with his manager, and then simultaneously, while all that was happening, I was also still doing covers on Instagram. So I would cover him, like, not just attacking it through one angle, but attacking it through the other of networking. So it was on Instagram and then tagging his manager, because if you tag the artist and they're getting, like, inundated with different tags, it's just difficult. But if you tag a manager, it's less traffic, so you have more probability of getting in contact with their team. So we were doing that simultaneously as well.
Where are you living at this point?
Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto. But I was living off my bartending money. But it's dwindling because I'm trying to focus on music. I love Florida for this, man. Because the bar that I used to work at, they had love for me there. And when I was like, yo, I'm low on money, and I couldn't get a job in Toronto bartending, because when you work at, like, it's just difficult because you got to kind of climb up. Usually, you have to climb up.
Sure.
Unless you have a link in a bar, you usually start, like, okay, bottle service, and then, you know?
Yep.
But they would allow me, and so I'd get the $50 flight back and then make bar money on a weekend and then fly back sometimes, and they would allow it. So sometimes I'd be in Florida doing work and then flying back to Toronto.
Wow.
Where would you stay when you were down in Florida?
At the spot that we had. So me and my parents basically, like, switched.
Yeah.
And when you're saying bottle service, are you doing, like, the fucking, like, you know?
That's what I used to do in Toronto, yes.
Really?
Yes. It was rough. Padded bras, a lot of makeup, fucking this smile.
Oh. Yep. Sparklers.
Sparklers. It was a lot.
Did you have letters for people? Like, were you part of, like, you know?
No, yeah. I just had the sparklers. Okay. I never had a letter. Yeah. VSOP. I fucking... Oh, I'm so happy for music. I hated it. I hated bottle service. Bottle service, I hated.
Right.
Because there's no protection, and these men are drunk and, like...
Oh,
handsy
and grabby.
Handsy, yeah. And fuck, man. It's just... It's hard. And in Toronto, I feel like people... there was just a fight every weekend. It was guaranteed, right? But in Florida... It was different because I'm behind a bar. So
there's a fight every night.
Well, yo, believe it or not, man, it's not as much fighting in Florida. And I think a lot of it has to do with the gun laws, because in Toronto, not a lot of people carry guns. So, like, fuck you, I fuck you. And then you fight. But in Florida, you fuck you could lead to losing your life. Yep. So I feel like people respect mortality more in clubs. So they're less likely. You know what I mean? Deadass. That's my theory. Because there wasn't as many fights when I used to bartend in Florida than there was when I used to bottle service.
Did you get into any fights?
Yes.
Are you a great fighter? Are you a better fighter or a better bartender?
I think I'm a better bartender because I have done more bartending than I've done fighting.
And that's
there's
a
only
good
been
answer.
This,
yeah,
like, sprinkle of fights. Yeah. It's always been in self-defense. I've never been the aggressor.
No. Yeah, for sure.
Just putting it out.
So you're working and living in Toronto for as much time as you can, and then you go back down to Florida. What does the city mean to you in your early 20s?
Which city?
Toronto.
A lot. It means home. It means family. It means music. It means community. It means growth. It means multiculturalism. It means being encouraged to wave the Canadian flag and wave the Colombian flag, both high and proud. It means beginnings. It means seeds. It means fucking sound. It means renaissance because of what the city's going through and, like, currently going through and what the city's been going through for a minute, because it's like it's almost overdue. We've been bubbling for a long time. We've done had hip-hop history in our city from time.
Yeah.
We've done had Chaos. We've done had Cardinal. So mm-hmm. I feel like now with Drake and Weeknd and everything, they opened this up beautiful opportunity. It's like we had the world mic, and now it's like... That's why Toronto doesn't sleep. That's why you see these kids working fucking their asses off. That's why you see so many kids coming out of Remix hungry as hell. That's why you see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so crazy because, like, all I really knew about Toronto, like, years ago was that Weeknd was kissing strippers. You know, like, that was...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, no. That's so funny. My manager's gonna hit me.
That's your legacy.
What the fuck are you doing? Jesus Christ.
So when you're up there and working, how sure are you that your music is going to get in the right hands?
I'm not sure. I was just work, like, head down and working.
Well, actually, go back. How did you pick your manager?
We fell into it. Like, we just fell into it, man. And because Reese is the one who told me about the Remix project, Reese had a lot to do with that, and he was helping me, man. He's the one who put me in contact with Junior. He's the one who did all those things before we even had conversations about management. He was just down to ride and down to help, and it mattered. And it was jokes because during that time when we had that conversation at the chicken spot, and now we're in situations where I'm putting out a song and publishing companies are calling and record labels are calling and we're not sure how to move because he's never done this before. Like, he's in music videos. He was doing music videos. He was lucky enough to have a homie who he'd done music videos for before, this guy named Sunreal, and his manager named Byron Wilson. He'd call him all the time and be like, yo, when you would do this with Sun, like, how do you go about this? And ask him for advice regarding contracts, regarding all these things. And Busy, Byron is Busy, that's what I call him. Busy, it's jokes because it's the same thread. He would always be down to ride, down to help, gaining nothing from the situation. So now when things are moving faster and we realize, yo, we gotta be more well-equipped, we gotta add someone else to the team, it was just like, it just made so much sense to add Busy to the team. And, like, they'd let us crash at their house in L.A. Like, I crashed on their couch so often, and they were... And
was it a couch or a love seat?
It was a couch. I was lucky. Yeah, it was a couch.
Do you think about the difference between who you were growing up, and you call yourself an asshole in that period of time, and maybe you were more on your own, and maybe you were making choices that you wouldn't make today. Do you ever compare that person with who you are now and think, like, how did I get to a place here where, like, someone's just letting me crash on their couch and someone's sitting, you know, with me and we'll collaborate on a song.
Yeah.
And like, they're not taking anything from me. They're just willing to give.
Do you all the people who like took chances on you.
It's crazy. Yeah. I feel honored, man. I'm grateful. I know I'm standing on a lot of shoulders, you know?
It's pretty wild.
It's nuts. It's nuts. I'm honored. It's hard to take moments like that because I'm proud of our work ethic as a team. We work hard, but because we work hard, the pace doesn't allow for us to stop and like smell the roses.
Hmm.
So it's nice to get questions like that because there are moments where I'm like, I used to beg people to take my mixtape. I used to bring my mixtapes to clubs. I used to beg DJs. I used to go to auditions and get rejected and leave with the heaviest heart. I used to do all that.
So. You used to, you know, spam people on Facebook. You know, I mean, like, you literally did all of it.
Wait, can you talk about busking, though?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you talking about, like, on the street
mm-hmm.
with, like, some sort of receptacle, like, that you hope is going to be filled with money when you leave at the end of the day?
Yeah, my guitar case.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your best night and what was your worst night?
My best was maybe $10, and my worst was nothing. There's some days it was nothing.
But you would still keep going out there.
I'll still keep going.
Like, this is a heavily trafficked area.
It was Kensington Market, so yeah and no, because it just depends what time you go. So sometimes I would go at night and it wouldn't be much, but then it would be more so for myself, you know? More
just
so like
heard.
A place to practice, a place to be heard, yeah, like that.
That was covers or originals?
Both. Covers and originals.
So
did either one do better? I mean, we're also talking about like a difference of $10, so yeah. It's not like
I don't know. I feel like covers did better because people are like
they
their
recognize.
Ears perk,
yeah.
When they recognize.
Did that leave you like energized, or did it like suck
you
dry?
That feels like a very like soul crushing sort of experience. But that you were able to keep going out there again and again and again sort of shows like this fight within you to make this thing happen.
It was lit when I had homies with me, because then it was just like jamming.
Yeah.
It was just chill, you know?
Oh, other musicians?
Not even musicians, just like homies.
Friends?
Yeah, homies.
Oh, that's dope.
Would just pull up and be like, and it would just be a jam, and it was cool. So those were dope. But then sometimes it would just suck and make no money and be like, fuck, and then look up the nearest open mic so that I could go and perform.
So you performed in church. First time performing? And
no, I used to perform for my family. Well, yes, I guess that's my first time performing for anybody outside of family.
Yeah.
No, that's a lie, too. I used to do talent shows when I was a kid.
Stop lying to
me. I know, yeah, yeah. Come on.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that Pinocchio commercial that's
yeah,
out?
Yeah.
It's
the
so
Geico
funny.
One.
I'm
yeah.
so
yeah.
excited to be here.
So you perform.
I am excited to be here.
So the microphone just falls over. The talent competitions. So what would you do? When was that? Where did you do that?
In elementary school. And I would sing like Amazing Grace, dressed in white, thinking wow. It was lit. But I sucked. Like, I dead ass, I sucked.
Can kids really suck, though?
Yes. Yes. What? Yes.
I don't know if like you're allowed to like judge like that. It's just like, you know.
Kids
they'll
sucking.
Grow into it.
I guess, yes, because that possibility exists. But then there are those beautiful freaks that are just born. But I'm not one of those. Like, I had to work for it.
Jesse, if someone is like, hey, you need to meet my child.
Yeah.
My newborn.
Yeah, do you say that to an ugly kid?
Yeah.
No, I would never say it's an ugly kid.
Right. See, that's what I'm saying. You're just like, oh, beautiful. They're lovely.
Yeah.
And
but if they try to tell me that them crying is singing, I'm going to Pinocchio their ass. You know what I mean? Like, I can't.
When you would perform as a kid, were you, like, I want to know, like, your personality type. Like, were you the one who was like, I'm going to shine on stage? Or were you, like, sort of a more withdrawn?
No, I think I was loud.
You came alive on stage, or just, like, in general, you were loud?
Loud. Like, no, and when I was performing, I'd come alive. Like,
yeah.
Like, with family and stuff. Oh, my God. With family and stuff, I would put, like, fruits in my hair. Excuse me. And pretend to be Celia Cruz.
Wow.
And, like, sit them down and then come out and do performances. It was a lot. Sometimes I remember, this is nothing to do with music, but it has to do with performance. My mom says one day I just decided to do a church. And she was like, what? And I was like, I'm the priest. I'm doing a church. And I got crackers and I like put her and like my aunt and my uncle through a mass. And they were all like, what the hell is going on? Like, what? What? Just performance.
Sunday service.
Sunday service. Yeah. Jesse Reyes. Yeah. Yeah. 6-year-old Sunday service.
Yeah. So when your music is starting to circulate and you're putting your stuff on SoundCloud? Like beyond the covers on like Instagram.
Yeah.
You're putting Facebook, it on SoundCloud. Yeah. Okay. SoundCloud. Yeah.
I miss that sometimes.
Sure.
And I miss that. And as I say that sentence, I realize that
you don't
I
need miss to. It.
Well.
Yeah.
I do miss it, but I know that in saying that I have to honor that I'm grateful for everything that's happening. I'm grateful for having a bigger budget because we're partnered with somebody, so it's the difference between using real strings versus like program strings. Like, I'm grateful for all that. I'm grateful for Spotify putting me on playlists, all that. The one thing that hurts is there's a process now, because the music business is that. Mm-hmm. But when you say music business, it's like saying holy money. It's an oxymoron. So I can't make a song in my living room on my shitty mic and be like, all right, and then put it on SoundCloud. Because now you have to be cognizant of like, okay, well, when's the album coming? Okay, yeah. Well, if we do it on SoundCloud, does Spotify have it? Okay, how much time do the DSPs need before they get it? Okay, and all this bullshit that's just a necessary evil for the success that I'm experiencing. So I have to welcome it with open arms, mm-hmm. because you can't have white without black, and you can't have up without down, and you can't have daylight without night. So I just got to take it and accept it and love it, and I do. But that process is the natural art process. Like, that's what me as a creative miss and need is creating, putting it out.
But then couldn't you do that, like, and now I'm just spitballing here, but like, couldn't you do that if you were on like Instagram Live? So you're not like actually putting it out, but you are giving that experience.
You know what I started doing? You know what a life hack I found?
Cocaine.
Not that one. Oh man. Fucking I love doing this. I was frustrated. I couldn't get shit out. And then one day, I wanted to sharpen my pen, like do an exercise that was going to be to just become a better writer. So I went on, not Instagram Live, but like, you know, the question bubbles?
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you want a song about? And I put it out there. And then people were like falling in love with a heterosexual girl, but she doesn't love you back. And then someone else was like, finals. And someone else was like, South Park. And someone else was like, all these things. And I was like, bless. And then I would do it. And then I did it for like an hour, and it's like 20 songs or 20 like mini songs.
That's pretty good.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
And that like experience of like,
Did the South Park material make it onto this new album?
No. It's still on my gram though. It's on my story highlight because I couldn't take it down. So I was like, I fuck with this. I like it. Lit.
So you miss the freedom of being able to do something and just give it to everyone,
yeah,
right?
Without like consequence.
That's the silver lining of pre financial success as a musician. That's the silver lining, is being able to just be like, because I used to do that, and it's part of my story because I had to do that to get like Cotton Candy. I have a song called Cotton Candy that was re-released. The original date that was released was maybe 6 years ago on SoundCloud, of me crying in my living room and not being able to talk to my ex and being like, well, maybe he'll hear my SoundCloud. I'm putting it up.
Did he?
Yeah.
And the response?
I don't know if it was sincere empathy. It might have been.
Hmm.
Yeah. It might have been. Who knows?
He's here, by the way.
Yeah.
My stomach sweat.
Do you have that same thing that your dad has, where it's like, life is too short, I'll let this just roll off?
No, I wish
you
I
hold
didn't.
On to the.
I try to just, but I'm
do you
not...
talk yourself into the idea where it's just like, well, this will make better art?
Oh my god, no, yeah. Never.
Oh, never.
No, I'm.
You're not like, well, at least this feeling is gonna like create a better song.
Never.
Yeah, you're just never. Living it.
Yeah, yeah. I just live in it. I never do that. I'm scared of that, because then you identify with being what other people perceive you as, and then that means that now your art is aiming. Mm. And when I aim, it feels synthetic once it's out of me. But when I don't aim and I just make whatever it is I feel, then that's that feels pure because it's heart to mouth to pen. But if I think about that, then it's heart to brain to politics to future to pen, and then it's just diluted. You know?
Future the artist or future the manager?
Future the future. Future.
What kind of movies do you like?
Oh, Pulp Fiction, Scarface, Goodfellas, Clockwork Orange, those types.
So bloody. Bloody.
Yeah. Yeah, bloody.
Do you allow yourself, okay, if you feel something in the moment, do you allow yourself any separation, or are you like, yo, I have to record this right now while it's in me?
In me. I have to do it right then and there. I fucking hate waiting for. So,
well, what's the longest that you've waited till I get an idea?
Never.
Well, if you're on a cross-country flight or something?
Then I record it, then I voice note.
Voice note, yeah.
Yeah, then I have to get it out.
What if, are you sitting next to anybody?
Yeah, but on a plane you can't hear shit. You know? You could be like, hey, you fucking suck, bitch. And you don't hear anything because you just hear the engine. It's lit.
Is that 14-year-old Jesse?
Probably. Yeah. Just whispering in the stranger's ears.
Yeah. When the labels come around and they start calling for you, mm-hmm. are you afraid of the freedoms you're going to give up to them? Do you think terrified. About that in that moment? Yeah.
Yeah, I was terrified.
Was there
any... Wait, how old were you at this point? It was like early 20s?
20, yeah, early 20s.
And
yeah.
But is there the other side where it's like you can maintain independence and just keep doing what you're doing? Or was it like, no, this makes the most sense?
No, we had, like, me and my team, we sat down and went through plethora amounts of pros and cons lists, viewed other artists as examples, talked to other artists about what the benefits are about partnering, what regrets they had. Like, we...
Did you... Okay, so every label is coming after you.
We were in a lit position.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Did you talk to artists from, like, said labels? Yeah. Were you like, yo, I want to know why I should sign to absolutely. Island or Atlantic or, you know... Interscope really? Or whoever.
In hindsight, is there any part of you that's like, I feel like we overthought this process?
What do you mean?
That like you put in like too many like graphs of just like crossing things out and being like pros, cons, like all this stuff. Or were you just like, because, you know, some people might just like go off of like instinct, right?
Yeah.
And some people might just go off of that. Do you think that you should have done either way? This I'm also happy. Might not be like the best phrased question. Like no, they're not no, all going to be winners.
it's science or yeah. it's but like art.
I like our decision because I'm happy with where we're at.
Yeah.
I'm happy where we're at because it was always part of the blueprint. The blueprint was never to have one song and shoot up and get top 40 and then have to maintain that and never be able to live artistic integrity and making whatever I want and then putting it out and then building a fan base and building this proper rooted massive tree trunk as opposed to one palma. Like a palm tree that just shoots mm-hmm. up
yeah.
because that could go when the storm comes but a slow well built tree trunk or well like one that's been grown throughout years and has a bunch of rings I feel like has more chance to stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always part of the plan, and I'm happy with.
Well, I don't even mean like where you ended up. I just mean the process of like it? of trying to decide all the things.
I'm happy because we were able to like I don't think I'd be as close with Rock if we didn't. I wouldn't be as close with the Rock dudes if we didn't because we were diligent about our time.
Yeah.
And then we were diligent about our not breakups, but telling people we're not going to go with them. So it was interesting to. See early on how quick faces changed
yeah.
and then what faces didn't and what people returned calls and said yo and what people were still down a ride and still giving me opportunities and what people weren't and I feel like that only happened because we were like meticulous yeah, and calling everybody and like and yeah. mm-hmm. you know what I mean
yeah
so
was that the first time that you would like you know you would had a fairly turbulent you know life up until that point you know and now you're this is like because you care, it's like a shift in your thinking and you become very diligent. Like you're just like, no, like this is like the whole,
it's your profession.
Yeah.
You need to sort of like ramp things it. Up. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I tweeted about this years ago. I was like, yo, I used to think I was lazy until I started doing what I loved and I'm a fucking workhorse. Fucking workhorse. When I love it, if you put me in front of some homework, or if you put me like, behind a fucking cashier little stuff like I'm gonna die. I used to write yeah. songs on receipts. I used to like all that stuff because it just wasn't, I don't think it was my vocation. I think I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
So when you sign, is there more pressure on you for your first project?
No, we had the project done. That's what was, that was lit too. When everyone started coming, it was because we had put figures out, but Kiddo was done. Kiddo was locked and loaded. So
you play that in the meetings?
I played it in meetings. Yeah. So everybody knew what was going to go down.
Do you watch everyone's faces, or do you just stay in your own sort of like zone?
I mix it sometimes.
Yeah.
I mix it. My manager's like a hawk. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah.
But I do, and I do, and I don't sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you have to show out for them to prove your worth? Like, are you, you know, because like Bobby Shmurda jumps on the table and does his thing, or like
Machine Gun Kelly
jumps, Machine Gun Kelly jumps on the table. Yeah, exactly. But you're just like, I'm me, I'm comfortable in that, and you either take me or leave me, and I'll do this somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because pretty much the music. Like, if you want to see me perform, come to a show. You know?
Yeah.
Pay me. Pay me. But no, it was cool. It was cool to be able to play it for people prior to, and it was cool to be able to like set a precedence for what kind of creative control was expected, what kind of like all of that was expected, because we had everything done and ready to go. So there wasn't going to be any meddling. We just need money and an open way and trust, and then we can make this happen. And we were able to get it.
What was that phone call like when you signed your deal to your parents?
Do they know?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Cause you know what I keep remembering? I just remembering fucking with like my dude Jermaine, cause he was one of the main reasons that we ended up going with Island, because he signed me to BMG. I signed a publishing deal before I signed a label deal.
Cause
I started off as a writer. When Jermaine went to Island, it added persuasion for us to go to Island. When we had called all of our no's, we were like, we're going to fuck with him, because I just like to do that. So we call him on speaker, and we're on the phone, and we're like, hey. And he's like, hey. I'm like, so we made a decision. He's like, yeah. We're like, we're not going to go with Island. And he's like, wow. Okay. Like, that's sad. It's like, you heard, you could hear, like, it was just awful.
And then you just hear you giggling, like, hee hee hee.
Well, no, my fucking manager gave it away in the back, because he was like, he's suffering, I can't hear it anymore. And I was like, we could have built this. That's what I remember. I can't remember what my parents said, because I just laughed so hard that time. I'm trying to think of what I said with my parents. I don't remember.
Have you ever been in a writing room that's just, like, not hitting?
No, I always make it work.
That's dope.
The song might not always be lit, because sometimes the frequencies just aren't.
But it's not aligned. For lack of trying. Yeah.
But yeah, there's never a time that I've just been like walk away defeated. No, we're making a song, even if it's ass. We're making five, and then it's gonna, if they're all ass, then we're gonna pick the one that's the least ass.
Yeah. And if I can't make music with you, then I'm just gonna, you know, make the South Park song.
That's
and
right. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what we're gonna go South with. Park song. But like when you did the Eminem song. And you were worried about, you know, is this going to come quick, or is this going to, take a longer time? Sorry, there was like a sexual innuendo that I was just like, don't. I, it was like a regrettable thing.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah. This is much better to stretch it out. Yeah. It's great.
Anyway, so, you were wondering like whether it was going to be like a slow process or a quick one.
Yeah.
And then it thankfully like it just all came to you.
Yeah. One of the few times in my life I'm happy it came quick.
Yeah.
I had to do it.
Yeah. There you go. That was good.
That was an alley-oop thing. Yeah.
I heard you talking about that on Lip Service.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Yo, what's her name?
Angela Yee.
Yeah, no, Angela Yee. But what's the blonde girl's name?
L'Oreal.
L'Oreal's so sweet.
L'Oreal
caught me at L'Oreal.
Yeah.
She caught me at the Grammy red carpet, mm-hmm. and we were talking there, and then she was like, yeah, she brought up Lip Service, and I was like, girl, and I'm like, I can't, my dad's right over there, and my dad like peeks over the corner, and he's like, I can't be fucking around today. Mess. Yes, I was really fortunate that it came quick.
Yeah.
Again.
Nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, as you grow with the label, was there an expectation you put on yourself, or did you redefine what success would be for you?
Interesting. We just had this conversation in the car. The blueprint's been the blueprint that we've had for the last 3 years. Well, last 3 years with the label, but last 4.5 years, 5 years with my management. Like, there's a plan that we had, and the plan consists of what I said to you, the palm tree versus the trunk. What are we trying to build? What kind of success do we want? 10-year legacy, 20-year legacy? What kind of mark do you want to leave? What kind of ripple do you want to turn into a tsunami? So I feel like the pressure's been on, but it's self-imposed.
That's smart. Is it numbers-based? Is it like feeling-based? Is it the type of festival
that
you
play? What are like the benchmarks that you're trying to...
To achieve?
Yeah.
The benchmarks for me are being able to get a like farm for my dad, being able to have enough success where it's going to be easy for me to start an orphanage or partner with an orphanage and name it after my mom, to have 6 or 7 Grammys on my wall, and to have died knowing that I actually like helped a million people at least. And yeah, and a lot of those things are going to be easier with the numbers. A lot of those things are going to be easier with more money. A lot of those things are going to be easier that way. So they kind of go hand in hand, but the seed of it is very much what I said earlier, the shit that's been on my vision board for years.
Yeah. What in your heart and your soul makes you want to start an orphanage?
My mom and how she's worked with kids her whole life. Like I told you, she used to work with kids in Colombia. I've watched her treat other people's kids like they're her own. Like I went through jealousy when I was a kid because I'd be like, what the hell? Like she and she, the love is just chelo, sí o no? Like she loves that way. She worries that way. She's just about that. And also what my dad went through, like losing his mom early and losing his dad as a teenager, and my experience. All that next to my experience where I was blessed with parents and blessed with having them there for me and blessed with having like unwavering love. Even when I was a dick, even when I was like the shittiest person, there was still unconditional love. That's beautiful. And if there's a way that I can contribute to kids that don't have that privilege, I'd like to do that.
Have you been back to the Remix Project?
Yeah, man. Hell yeah. What?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Have you found anybody who you can mentor?
People ask me questions all the time. We do like, well, when I've done there, I've done, what do you call it? Like a talk, not a seminar, but like a talk to just like
a Q&A, link with the kids.
Yeah. We've been able to, I don't want to like, that sounds weird because I feel like I'm tooting my own horn. But anyways, I've done stuff with them.
Yeah. Tooting your horn is something you talked about on lip service.
Oh, fuck. Yes. Oh, damn it. I didn't even realize why you were dapping me. I was like, yes, don't toot your own horn.
So you've gone up there and they look to you for inspiration, maybe some answers as to like the path that you've taken.
Yeah, man. And the best, like, that's what's crazy is I can't really listen to someone's story and be like, yo, you should do this and that, because it's not my place. I'm not God. You gotta figure it out. But the best I can do, I feel like, is when I tell people my story and I'm like, yo, when I was in your shoes, this and this and this is what I did. And however you can translate that, like how I translated what Doc told me, is like the best that I can do.
And those kids see something in you that is a reflection of them.
That's lit.
And it's wild.
It's wild.
And so they're not so alone, and nor are you, you know? And that's quite a legacy to leave, I'd say.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's dope, man.
Yeah.
That's
so
dope. It's humbling. It gives me purpose, and it gives new meaning to life. Because I make music selfishly. I make music for myself.
Yeah.
But the fact that people connect with it after the fact is this beautiful, positive byproduct that God gave to me because I wasn't expecting it. And when I hear stories of when people connected with things, it just makes me feel like I have purpose.
Yeah, it's a funny thing being an artist, you know? It's like, oh, I got your mom, right? Your mom does greater work because she's taking care of kids and molding them into real human beings. And it's like, we can second guess ourselves and be like, oh, what do we do but make people laugh or like inspire people? Or what is it that people connect with? And it's like, everybody who sits in this chair has the same sort of thing, you know?
Crazy.
It is.
It's nuts. It's cool. It's nuts, and then it's jokes to like split perspective. Who was it? Someone said they were talking to one of the Beatles, and they were like, "Music secrets." And then one of the Beatles was like, "It's just music," and just did this, and like nonchalantly, but at the same time, like it's music. Yeah. It's just crazy. It's
sounds like
both
Paul.
Sides.
Yeah.
No, well, because somebody—I
mean, like, I don't know him.
Somebody too could say like, they, yeah. Yeah,
my friend Paul. Yeah, he says. It's just music.
Like I said,
know?
Everybody who sat in that chair.
Yeah.
But people could also like look to music and be like, "Yo, your music changed my life. Like, not just like the way that you got to where you are, but what you've written, your poetry, your chords strike something inside me that saved my life, or that like moved me, or caused me to live my life in a certain way.
That's nuts. That's crazy. It's humbling. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. I say, like, it's just fucked when I hear that or read messages like that, especially because I can pinpoint mine. Like, I can pinpoint when I was in Florida and I was frustrated, and I, right before Remix, like, this is right before I applied, and I felt unhappy and I was trying to figure it out. So I was, you know when you, something's off, so you try to do everything else? So I just felt unhappy. So I started working out like crazy. I started cleaning the crib. I started like everything, trying to fix it, and I couldn't. And then I heard, and then Ruiz sent me BJ the Chicago Kid, and I heard one of his songs called Dream 2.
Changed everything.
It was like someone, it was like if your glasses were cloudy and yeah. someone was like.
Yeah, it's like the Zyrtec commercial. Like,
it, was just like, it is like the Zyrtec yeah. commercial. Yeah. It is, man. It is.
Shouts to Zyrtec. Shouts to Geico. Yeah.
Shouts
yeah.
to BJ.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, it's so funny how Chicago played such a major part in your musical life.
Yep.
I know. Look yeah. at you right now in your Scottie Pippen jersey. Yeah, man.
And you make such beautiful music.
You know what I mean? He's just so talented.
Yeah, yeah. So this new project is taking you how long to put together?
A minute. There's certain songs that I held from Kiddo that I knew I wanted to hold for the album.
Wow.
And then there's songs that I made like within the last 6 months. So it's a...
Was it hard to sit on the ones from Kiddo?
No, it wasn't. Because I knew it. I just knew there's certain things I wanted to save.
But like in the same way that like, you know, when we were talking about holding on to ideas like on a plane and you have to like get them out. For it to like reach its audience, but like yeah. it took a while.
In that way, yes, because there's shit that I wanted to play for people, mm-hmm. but I was also like, I selfishly wanted it out, but I knew that for the bigger plan and all the necessary evil stuff that I talked about earlier, I knew that it would be more impactful if I held it in for the album.
Are you somebody who has demoitis?
Yeah, I am.
So if a song sits on the shelf for too long, you might be like, I'm over it already.
Yeah, sometimes it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. Yeah. It's like if you, and it might be a lit song. It might yeah. be a wicked song, but it's like having a rose, like right here. And all you see is red. And you're right. like, this is just a fucking red wall. But that's why it's important to have a dope team, because people here are like, no, bro, that's a sick ass rose. And you just can't see it because you're too close.
What song can you point to that you're like, yo, that's one that I didn't think was one?
Love in the Dark. Love in the Dark was in the Dropbox folder that I have for pitches, because we have a Dropbox folder that has hundreds and hundreds of songs, and then a subfolder that's like pitch, like it's like a sweater that I knitted that I'm like, this is a lit sweater, but it's not for me. So I put it away. And then the guys were going through the folder one day, and then they were like, what the fuck is this song in this folder? What are you thinking? And then Busy said it too, and then Jermaine was like, are you fucked? And then, yeah.
And it ends up being the one.
And it ends up being, yeah.
Can I just say, your way with words is so, and there might not be like a response to this, but like your choices of metaphors are so interesting. Like you saying like the rose, or like I have an old sweater. Mm-hmm. It's just like they're so poetic. But like I would never picture anybody saying like these very same metaphors the way that you're saying them. And like they're so specific.
Yeah. Bet you didn't think that was going to come up today, did you?
Yeah.
Thank you for the praise of my metaphors.
Yes.
My grade 7 poetry teacher, yeah. Miss Hidden, would be proud.
Yeah. Yes.
I have one really important question. Your man over there,
Chalito,
just got his feet done for the first time.
He did!
Congratulations.
Shout out to Lito's with the manicure and pedi, or just the pedi, my bad. Yeah.
What was the experience like for you bringing your friend to the nail salon?
I wish I could tell you it was the best, but it was anticlimactic because this motherfucker has good control about tickles and all that shit.
No.
So I was like, me what, and Cheyenne.
You wanted
Cheyenne
him to drop
do...
his phone into like
yes,
the fucking bucket or something like that?
I wanted a
like,
show. I wanted fireworks. I wanted
well,
all
you
that.
You have to bring him to the place where like the fish nibble at your feet.
That's what Cheyenne said.
Well, Cheyenne's a smart motherfucker.
Yeah.
Smart motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I got to do. Yeah. I got to do that, man.
Yeah.
Damn, I was cheesed. I was like, man. And he was
You're like
oh,
fuck
this.
Is
cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, can you read the poetry, Joe?
Yeah. So I was looking on your Twitter before, as one does.
Yeah.
And you were talking about donuts.
And
I'm going to have you read this.
Yeah.
Okay.
We decided this was poetry.
Perfect.
It might have just been like, you know, free thought.
Verbal diarrhea?
Yeah. It could have been anything.
Twitter finger diarrhea? Yeah, I just got a visual.
All right.
I want a donut till I have a donut. And then I just take one bite and set it down. The end. If I can't get the donut I want, it makes me crave it more. But the end is still the same. Once I finally get it, I'll take a bite and then I'll set it down and say goodbye. Heart.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
How do we get sponsored by Tim Hortons?
Yeah, exactly.
Yo! Fuck, I'd love a Timbit right now.
By the way, they're opening up a Krispy Kreme down the block from us.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, do you fuck with Tim Hortons, Krispy Kreme, or Dunkin' Donuts?
Timmy's, bruh.
No.
Is that just because...
Like, it was a question.
I had to ask.
Yeah. It's just like...
I had to ask.
It's so good. Have you guys ever had the ice cap from Timmy's?
No.
Bruh. It's so... Yeah. A lie? It's crack. You know why it's so good, man? You know what? We know what
That's
this
Nick,
world
by the way.
Needs more
yeah,
of?
Nick.
Yeah. Nick. You know what this world needs more of? Consistency. Okay, Dunkin's.
We're still talking about donuts?
Yes.
Okay.
Dunkin's is all right. Dunkin's iced coffee is all right, but it's never consistent. Neither is Starbucks. You always have to make it yourself, so maybe the spoon is bigger than what you're used for. Maybe it's like, nah. But if you get a small iced cap from Timmy's on January 19, fucking 68, and you get one in 2020, you'll know that you can rely on it. And still just be as good, you know? Oh, I miss Timmy's. It's so good.
Oh, actually, yeah.
Say
there's
word.
One.
There's one
yeah.
here.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
On 50th Street.
On 50th.
Or
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yo, your team needs to step it up.
Yeah, I know exactly.
No offense.
You're fine.
I also wanted to ask. You are a spokeswoman.
Oh.
For Secret.
Yeah.
Antiperspirant.
Okay.
I am.
What,
yeah,
how
so
did,
fuck Geico. Yeah.
How did that happen?
They were fans. They fucked with me, man, and their team reached out to my team.
They weren't like you
think?
Sweat a lot.
Jesse, we're gonna help you out. Yeah, they saw me at a show where I just lifted an arm and just doused it everyone in the front row with my sweat.
They sent you an email and it was just like yuck.
Yeah.
With the little water emoji. Yes. No, they're lit, man. They just reached out and they were like, let's do it. And I was like, all right. And then I went into the Dropbox folder and was searching for songs because I was on road or on tour. I don't know. I was fucked somewhere working and trying to figure it out. And then had this song that was originally called No Breaks. The song I made at Babyface's studio. And it's... And the reason it's important that it was his
mm-hmm.
is because when I used to, like, when I'd walk in that studio, the walls are like twice the size of this, and then the hallway is four times this way, and you do not see a fucking ounce sliver of wall. It's just plaques. They're on the floor. They're like fucking, there's not enough wall for the amount of plaques this man has. It's fucked. And so there's a photo on my grandma about it of me like standing there in awe of this beautiful fucking summary of accomplishments. And I walked into the room and I was like, I can fucking do this. I want to do that. So the song originally says, no breaks, I ain't stopping till I see gold plates in my office. No, like, I won't chase, I ain't stopping. Nobody for nothing, I could do it. No gold plates. And then we were like, oh, this might be an option. So we played it for Secret Fuck With It. And I was like, all right, cool. And they brought it back. I was like, how can I do this? And so rearranged certain things. But the thing I love about that song is that in its seed, in the truth of the song, in the soul, in the deepest abyss of the song, it comes from a seed of ambition. It comes from a seed of, like, wanting more. And I can do this. So it just aligned. And I feel like they probably felt that. They resonated with it because they liked it.
I really thought you were going to be like, I changed it from no breaks to no sweat.
Yeah.
Like, oh. Good job. Yeah. Well, way with words.
Yeah. Jesse, it was really a pleasure and an honor to have you.
Thanks,
up here,
man.
This was super dope to hear your whole story.
My managers are cheesy. They didn't come. They're fans of you guys.
Oh,
man.
That's dope too.
Yeah, love they're fans. Man. They're but they had a meeting and they're the suits.
So. All good. No sweat. You know.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. They just want you. Tell them.
What's that?
Tell them.
Oh, send us a check.
Yeah.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste Time with Us, The Real Jeff. People want to find out more about us. I'm Eric with the curly hair. You're Jeff with the glasses. Together, we are It's The Real. No apostrophe. No spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called Waste Time with It's The Real. If people want to find out more about what's going on with us, Jeff, where can they go?
You can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. We have all of our old episodes and our new ones on all streaming platforms. I'm talking about Spotify, Castbox, Google, Apple, SoundCloud, AudioMac. Wherever you want to find us, we are there.
How about youtube.com/itsthereal?
That's where you go for our videos.
True.
You can also find us at twitter.com/itsthereal and instagram.com/itsthereal.
And if you guys want to be a part of this journey here with us, go to patreon.com/itsthereal. Jeff, now is the time when we want to shout out all of you generous people who have joined this fight with us.
Well, I already shouted out the 10 producers who have joined. I also want to shout out Jason Johnson, Jamal Long, Ian Dankwa, Wesley Yankson, Matt Tompkins, Ness Lee, William Cooney, Michael Sanchez, Bun B, Alicia Solomon, Ain't No Jigga, Harold Little, Julia Rubin, Anthony Cruz, Dante B, John Fry, the podcast guy, Zion Adesem, Dang Thukwum, Ray Rodriguez, Connor Meager, Jimmy Brandley, Imtiaz Choudhury, Daniel aka All I See Is Blinking Lights, Steve Whitehurst, Parth Patel, Landon Becker, Hardin, Forge, Esther Bloom, Frederick Sieber Leitner, Corey Ball, Matt Fastow, Splutch, Felipe Morgado, Eric Guerra, Brian Hasty, Shale Thacker, Kazim Famuide, Matt Migliarelli, Jared Dodd, Rafael Castaneda, Rachel McCoy, Chris Fox, Josh Gonzalez, David, Brian Reddy, Christopher Williams, Kevin, Benjamin Jacobs, Mitchell Boyd, Ahmed Oda, Sunsei Lee Kaplan, Reggie Bullock, Daniel Titopoli, Sean Austin, and Kaylin Summers.
Shout out to all you out there who have been so generous. Jeff, shout out to you for getting through all those names.
I have mispronounced probably 75%.
It's pronounced Brian Reddy.
Yeah.
As always, guys, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week.